Hey, I'm Todd Knock, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
That was pretty savage.
Gil Kane is in a savage.
You see the new Savage Sword of Conan?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. No? Well, you know what they say, right?
It's only six issues.
Though. I know. That's good. And I'm in for all six, but
okay,
they say you can't go home again, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like they had the key. They couldn't get it in that little slot. It's like it was dark. It was too dark. Couldn't find the hole with the key. We got the formula, but we just can't plug it in. What's happening?
Well, it's because the Conan the Barbarian series kind of put us. It gave us a false sense. We thought, hey, listen, we've been enjoying this series. How could you fail with Savage Sword?
Right. It's too digital, too dark.
Oh,
yeah. Two of the things that were not typical of the original Savage Sword. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little bit too stringent in my assessment of it.
No.
What with me being an admirer of the original series. But whatever. Hey, everybody. What up? It's 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 905. And I'm on the edge. I'm Vince B.
All right, Bono. I am David.
Oh, no. Don't compare me to Bono. Anybody but Bono. Even though I have those same letters in my name.
True.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm Helen of Windhorn.
Wow. You're not Helen. You're Jason Wood.
For sure.
Everybody. Here together.
From the future.
He is. From the future?
Yeah, because that doesn't hit the... It stands next week.
We get review books, bro.
I know.
We do, but they're all electrons and shit.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
You know where you can get books that aren't electrons?
Where?
CheapGraphicNovels.com. They're all real. You can hold them in your hands. You can kill a bug with them. CheapGraphicNovels.com have everything you want at the price you want to pay. OGNs. Love them. Trade paperbacks. Ditto. Omnibus editions. The lifeblood, right? Who doesn't love a good omnibus edition? And manga. I did that in ascending order. You may disagree. And you're going to get them cheaper than you would get them at Amazon. Facts. Just go to cheapgraphicnovels.com. Make an order. Small. You're going to receive an email confirmation of your order. You're going to reply to that email confirmation saying 11 O'Clock Comics sent me, and you are going to be gifted with free shipping on your next order. That's really important. That's massive savings because you're saving anywhere from like 30 to 50% on your books, and you're not paying shipping. Shut up. It's a great deal. CheapGraphicNovels.com.
Get it.
Yep.
Nice.
All right.
Drinking something better tonight?
No. It's like if God had a boil on his ass and they lanced it and drained it into a cup, that's what this would taste like.
My goodness.
Yes. It's shitty Woodbridge wine. Screw Robert Mondavi and his disgusting...
I think you just got a bad bottle, bro.
Whatever. It's
all
bad.
All weekend to pour it down the drain.
I just left it
out.
I put it
after last episode.
I put it in a dog bowl and just waited.
Huh.
Right.
Yeah, and
it's trash.
I'm spicing it up after last week's straight up water. I'm having straight up seltzer water tonight.
Oh shit.
Pink grapefruit, baby.
You know, you better slow down. You're taking it a little too hard. You're out of control.
I know. I might need to go to a meeting or two this week.
Wait, you're going to the city?
No.
Oh. The way he said it, like, you got bed bugs? Dap,
oh my God.
Save us, Dap. You're our only hope.
I am. I'm trying to get that little bit of a chill down my back. So the only thing that really cures that for me is some good bourbon, and I still got some of that Bardstown, so that's what I'm enjoying.
All right, in case you're new to the show, we talk about comics a lot. And that's what we're going to do right now.
Hmm.
Yes. I have something that I guarantee 100% neither of you have read.
Do tell. I hope I could tell you you're wrong. Go ahead.
I was originally put off by this series because of the salacious nature of the covers.
Mm,
go figure. Okay. Go figure, right? They're very cheesecakey and very... to maybe unfairly peg a style. They're very Udon-esque. Big boobs. A lot of cheesecake. Plus they have the cosplay cover, which really turns me off. But I took a look at the interior art, and I was flummoxed at how good it was. It is written by Charles Ardai, which is who is the founder of Titan Comics' Hard Case Crime series. Did not know that.
Oh, okay.
Did a little research. Illustrated magnificently by Angkor Heng. And maybe I'm doing that wrong. Maybe it's Angkor Kang. I don't know. But sorry if I mispronounced your name. Color art by Asifur Rahman. Letters by David Leitch. Of course, it's published by Titan Comics because it is part of their Hard Case Crime series. It is called Gun Honey.
Yes, it is.
Have either of you read this?
Haven't read it yet.
Yes, I think I did, actually.
What? All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I have the hardcover. Yeah, I have the hardcover.
I know it's a sequel series, too.
There's three.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm locked in. I mean, and it's all because... I mean, the writing is great. The writing is very cool. If you could surprise me, not once, but multiple times during a miniseries, you've captured my heart. But the art by Angkor Kang is just... This book, I'm going to sell it hard because this is how I feel. This book has the feel of an Eclipse comic from back in the day.
Wow.
I don't know how you take that, but that, for me, is high praise. Because I pretty much loved almost everything Eclipse put out. And it just feels like a... Well, I'll tell you about it. It opens very strangely. There's a man named Gian Kouros. He's a rich, fat-ass motherfucker. And he's on his yacht a ways away from the beach. And he's scanning the beach with, you know... goggles, and he instructs his men to retrieve women that he fancies. This is the kind of guy who believes like his money enable him to do whatever he wants. You know the type, right? But unfortunately for him, he's made a very, very bad choice. The target of his attention has an ulterior motive for being on that beach. So the goons bring this woman to the yacht. And she asks to use the bathroom, and she places a gun that she had concealed somewhere, I don't know, because she was wearing a bikini, I don't know, I mean, the mind wanders, right? She places the gun in the restroom, which is cleverly retrieved by an assassin who claims to have some kind of gastric issue, and Mr. Gian Kouros is no more, dead. This is the work of the gun honey. This is what she does, and she is the best at what she does. Her name is Joanna Tan, and she grew up in Singapore. She was the youngest of five children, her siblings all brothers. Mother died giving birth to her. So she carries the guilt, right? And the family was involved in all sorts of illicit activity. Dad and the boys would be, you know, whatever, running drugs or guns or breaking and entering or theft, you know, whatever they needed to do to survive, right? But Joanna, Dad calls her his little mouse because she's small and she's fast and she's smart. She gets in, she gets out. And her family's targeted by someone. All of them, save her, died from a well-placed bomb. More guilt, right? So she uses those skills imparted to her from her father. Dad doted on her, and he taught Joanna stuff that he never showed the boys. And she uses these skills that she has honed as a child to serve her well in adulthood as the gun honey. And she's infamous. She does one thing really, really well. She gets weapons into even the most impenetrable locations. That's what she does. She doesn't... She will if she has to, but she doesn't kill. She just provides clients with the tools with which they can kill. So I guess she's culpable, right? There's a black ops government agency helmed by a woman known as the Burrow Bitch that brings Joanna in, and she wants her on the payroll. And Joanna's not having anything to do with it. She's like, nope, I work for myself. And of course, next to the Burrow Bitch is a very suave, handsome agent named Agent Barrow. And, you can write the story, right? Joanna wants nothing to do with it. So it turns out that she's hired again to do what she does by a shitheel named Ugras. Right, and he hires her to get a gun into Branson Heights prison. How do you get a gun into a prison? Like, that's rough, right? The logistics of doing so is inconceivable, but she does, because this Ugras guy, an inmate, sold his brother some really bad drugs, which killed him, and he wants revenge. So what Joanna does, really smart, she cozies up to a female guard that has a very similar physical appearance, same body type, same hair color. And I'm pretty unflappable when it comes to comics and art in general. It takes a lot to shock me. But there's a page turn in this sequence that I just said, what the fuck? What is happening? Because, the book is cheesecakey. Up until this point, not any nudity, I don't want to say not any, but suggested nudity. Like, it's a mature rated title, but up until this point, there wasn't really anything super explicit. And then you turn the pages, like, what is going on here? Sweaty, naked, writhing, head between the legs. Like, what is happening? It was a real shocker. And I respect that. I admire that. If you can shock me at 58 years old with two women going at it, like, I'm down, right? I'm down. So the whole point of hooking up with this woman was to get her key card to get into the prison. And she cuts her hair to in similar fashion as the prison guard and does her job. She brings the gun in and, okay, you know, job over. Not so much. Because the gun she brought into the prison has turned into a real mess. The hit did not go down as planned, which results not in the death of one inmate, but 29 people. So the guy that was supposed to perform the hit fucks it up, and the target gets the gun and goes on a fucking rampage. The target is a drug runner who goes by the name of Afan. And he's a real special case. He was scarred over 90% of his body. He's in constant pain from the burns. Has no fingerprints, so he's really hard to find, right? He gets out of prison. He goes back and he kills Ugras, the person that contracted the hit, and all of his men. And he leaves a thank you note in blood for Joanna. And so the Burrow Bitch uses that fact that Joanna provided him with the tool that just killed 29 people, right? So she gets her in. She's like, you know, you did this. You made this happen. You got to help us bring this guy in. And to say there are twists at the end of this miniseries is an understatement. There shit went down. One of the incidents I guessed beforehand because they gave me all the clues. So I was able to guess correctly, in this case, one of the twists. But the other two, I did not see coming at all. And that's a – if you could do that, pull the rug out from under me and like, oh, you know, you get to that point where you're just like, oh shit, I didn't see that coming. Like, that is great. You have my respect. So like, I'm my eyes on this Gun Honey series now. There is, you know, you get the previews and it's flippy covers. One of the covers features the new Gun Honey miniseries. So don't let the super slick cheesecakey, covers sway you. That's not what the book looks like inside. The book looks like it's pretty close to Bronze Age. Very, very well delineated figures. Gunplay, espionage, ne'er-do-wells. Like, it's really good-looking book. I don't want to say Dave Stevens because it's not in that wheelhouse with the line style. But it's very exceptionally rendered. Whether it's on a yacht with all of the people that do their things on a yacht, or a casino, or a bathhouse, like, it's really sharply drawn, and I really loved it for that. But the fact that Ardai just surprised me multiple times, I was like, okay, I'm a fan. You got me. And Joanna is not ashamed of her body. She's very comfortable in her own skin, to the point where she'll go completely naked in front of a group of people and whatever. If she's got it, if it helps her get the job done, she'll do it. There's a lot after the scene with the prison guard. There's a lot of nudity in this book, and it's all, you know, extremely well done. So there's nipple clamps if you're a fan of that kind of thing. Towards the end of the series. I loved it. I thought it was, I was genuinely shocked at how much I just embraced this book.
Nice. And
yeah. So I'm a fan. And it is, once again, to reiterate, it's Gun Honey. Charles Ardai wrote it, and it's illustrated by Angkor Heng, and it's published by Titan. And you should at least investigate it. You know, you don't have to buy it. Just take a look at it, and you may be pleasantly surprised, as I was. Which runs counter to Jason's claim that I don't like crime comics, which I do if they're really good. The thing, one of the things that got me to read this book was there are two pull quotes. One of them's from Stephen King. The other one's from Ed Brubaker. Whether or not they pay these people to write pull quotes, I don't know. But if Stephen King and Ed Brubaker co-sign something, I'm in. Right?
Yeah, that's a hell of a pair to endorse your work.
Pretty much the greatest pop writer of all time and the greatest crime writer in comics of all time. Yeah. Okay. Those are two gets.
Stugats.
Yeah. That was really fun. Really great.
Nice.
Joanna's beautiful. It seems like dad was Caucasian and mom was from Singapore. So she has a... she does have Asian features, but she does have, I mean, they're blended. She does have a Betty Page-ish look to her at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I loved it. Loved it. Yep.
Respect.
Yeah. I think you guys would like it.
No, like I said, I read it 2 years ago. I have a volume here, but I don't remember it. So, but that doesn't mean I just don't remember it.
Oh, you have the first volume?
Yeah.
With the Sienkiewicz cover?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for it.
I think it's like $10 on DCBS, 10 or 11 bucks. It's not, it's not going to break the bank. Yeah.
I see what your graphic novels has before.
But it is only a 4-issue miniseries. So, yeah. Like Joanna, they get in, they get out. They don't belabor the point at all.
Bada bing, bada boom.
But the twist at the end, like, holy shit, stop. I did, wow. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Take it away. Somebody.
Well, speaking of your favorite things, Vince, few things get you happier than Greg Rucka.
Oh, stop. You know what? I'm glad I'm sitting down if you're going to talk about Rucka, because I get a little woozy if I'm standing up.
I know you do. Talked about this book back when the first issue hit, and we're now through 6 issues, which actually in the case of this book is 2 arcs. Because it's kind of European, they're doing 3-issue oversized issues. And that is The Forged, which I know it was Newbery and a couple other people's favorite sci-fi fantasy comic of last year. I had let the second arc, issues 4, 5, and 6, stack up because I wanted to read them in a chunk, and finally got around to reading them, and I'm so glad I did. This is written by Rucka and Eric Troutman, and the art is by our boy Mike Henderson. Fantastic art. For those that don't remember the premise, it's it's a far-flung space empire vibe, right? Like there's an empire that's run by the Empress, and it spans the galaxies. And one of the ways that they continue to have control is they breed these super soldiers who are women. Because for those that don't know Rucka, he generally almost always writes female protagonists. That's his vibe. The Forged is the name of this group of basically like the most badass genetically engineered soldiers. And in the first arc, we saw one of the groups be sent on a mission that was out of the ordinary, and they thought they were going to find something and ended up finding something else entirely, and kind of stumbled into a grand conspiracy, because apparently in this universe, they haven't, the Empire hasn't come across sentient existential threats in so long that they stopped thinking that they existed. And then the Forge on this mission come across really smart, well-advanced aliens that almost take them out. So the second arc is they're now back on the home planet and they're explaining what they found, and we get drawn into a very deep conspiracy where it seems like there are some powers that be that maybe want to do away with the Empress. And we also get to meet the Empress, who's hot as balls. I should say all these women are beautifully rendered by Henderson. Now the Forge, the warriors, they're pretty, like, they're big. They look like professional wrestlers. You know, they're of varying sizes, super muscular and whatnot. And then there's these witch-like telepath crew that hang out with the Empress as well, the Cassandras, and they use their bodies and sex to curry favor. And they're drawn just impeccably gorgeous, like straight out of like an issue of Metal Hurlant. And then the Empress is a fox as well. So lots of good eye candy in this, but it's a really, really fun book. And man, oh man, is it action packed. And the leader of the Forge is, they call her Vic, but her name is short for Victory. And they get, you know, they're chilling on the home planet on leave. And like I said, shit starts to go down, which basically involves the ne'er-do-wells decide that they need to get rid of this group of Forged because they know too much. And let's just say trying to take them out was a lot harder than the powers that be expected. And we kind of find ourselves at the end of this second arc with the new status quo is now this conspiracy is out there. The Forge realize the kind of shit they're in because they basically they're genetically engineered soldiers. So they're just not, they're almost incapable of not following orders. But they realize they're now in the position where they have to not follow orders to try and stay alive. So it's kind of got like a Bad Batch vibe to it, Dad. I know, Vince, you know, but it's like kind of got that whole kind of thing going on where now they're kind of like renegades, but they're the best soldiers of the bunch, but they're kind of renegades now. So it's like they're kind of like up against everybody else. But it's Henderson's just on a whole nother level with this book. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about attention to detail, and he's crafted just beautiful scapes, and the vehicles look great, and the weapons are badass, and they wear these exoskeletons when they're on missions, which are super cool. Just a ton of creative character and set piece design by Henderson, world building, if you will, in this. And you know, I've always liked Rucka's work. I think it's been a while since I've read something from him. So yeah, I think this is certainly on its way to being one of my favorite Greg Rucka stories. The Forged, and I believe 7 and 8 have already been solicited, so it's continuing apace.
I like the format they've established with this series.
Yeah, it's a real European vibe.
A different form factor always attracts me.
Yep. Yeah, and then yeah, you I get should say it's like a square, but these comics are like they're not quite square bound, but they're not 8.5 by they're not normal
right.
Comic size.
Like with Image did with the Golden Age comic format. With the annuals that Eric Larson was helming. Like, I like an out-of-the-brackets format, but then you have the problem of, like, what am I going to do with this? I don't have a bag that could fit this thing. Do I just put it on the shelf? But such concerns shouldn't dissuade you from buying them. And that's where that's where I'm at now. Like, I don't really care if you want to tweak the format. Like, I'm like, Last Ronin is not standard comic size format,
right?
Mm-hmm. And that's okay by me. I you're going to restrict yourself from enjoying good work because it doesn't fit a template? Like, no, that's weird. So yeah, I do admire the format they got going on this, and I have been looking at each issue, and I think the art is really great.
It is. It's really, really great.
Maybe yeah. I'll read it.
Then there's some sexy time. They get it on. They get their fuck on. Yeah, it's fun. Like I said, it's definitely. I'm sure they were inspired to do something. It's very evocative of heavy metal kind of thing vibe. So I'm sure that's where they're taking their inspiration.
Nice.
Excellent.
Heavy metal.
I was really so Superman number 10 by Joshua Williamson and Bruno Redondo and Chao Felipe. Colors by Adriana Lucas, letters by Ariana Mahar. Previous issue, Superman was transported to the Wild West of Metropolis, along with Marilyn Moonlight. And in this issue, we find them 4 days since they were transported to the past. So while Mercy and Lois and Lena Luthor are figuring out a way to bring Superman back, Superman's just doing what Superman does. And he tries to just keep out of sight. Well, he's incognito. He's wearing clothes of the era. So the suit is hidden. But he's just... he comes across, he and Marilyn find a couple of wagons, but there are no survivors. And we find out that Terra Man, of all foes, is the reason why these people are no longer living. So Superman shows up in town, and he figures... with the tech that Terra Man has, they'll be able to get home to the present. Clark kind of just pushes the saloon doors in and says that, I'm going to need you to stop terrorizing the people in this town. And Terra Man recognizes him vaguely without the suit, but then it clicks and he remembers that this is Superman, but he walked in here. It means you don't have your powers. You would have just swooped in and just taken me away, but you didn't do that. So there's something not quite right here. And this time isn't big enough for the both of us, he says. So we're going to handle this outside the old fashioned way. So they're doing the old duel face off, 20 paces apart, and Terra Man says, on the count of three, one, and then he starts just blasting his gun and says three, and it looks like all that time out in the sun has done Superman some good. So he bullets obviously didn't affect him. His clothes are a bit tattered now, but he floats himself up into the sky, and Terra Man threatens the rest of the town. He's like, listen, you may be bulletproof, but the people in this place aren't. And he starts firing at a bunch of them, so Superman can't catch the bullets because of Terra Man's tracer bullets, or that's what his pistol spits out. So he gets his little flying motorbike and he goes to get away. But Superman, while he's catching the bullets, Marilyn lassos Terror Man's little flying moped out of the sky and sticks him in jail. So Superman and Moonlight are leaving the town. We get a little bit of Marilyn's past and how she came to be. And Superman and Marilyn end up back in present day Metropolis. And while this was happening, Superman was writing a letter to Lois. He was just thinking, because he was reminiscing about Sundays on the couch next to his father, watching the old westerns, the old serials, really enjoying them. So it was interesting to kind of live that life briefly. But like he says, the past is a nice place to visit, but he wouldn't want to live there. And he missed Lois, missed the kids. He'll be home soon, but before that, he's got to go rescue a kitten. He'll put out a fire. And then he flies home. Lois isn't there. Flies to the Daily Planet. Lois isn't there. Flies to LexCorp. And he's looking for Mercy. He's looking for Lois. And Lena comes running out and says, "You have to run, Superman. Just get the hell out of here." And he's trying to figure out what's happened. And she's like, "No, I'm. There's no time. You've got to get away." But before he can say anything else, we get a kryptonite gas bomb is released, and Superman gets hit upside the head and knocked to the ground, all because of the Lex Luthor Revenge Squad. And so you have Graft and Farm and everybody, well, not everybody, but you've got the chain. You've got somebody back here. His face is in shadows. His head is in shadows. It looks like he's wearing like a modified version of Lex's old purple and green power suit. But the ultimatum is either Superman joins the squad or Metropolis falls, and then we'll find out how LexCorp was taken over by this squad in the next issue. It was nice to see Redondo's art here. It was a nice little respite, more or less, from the overarching story that's been going on in the series since it started. And I haven't thought about, never mind seen him, Terror Man, in fucking decades. So that was neat. But it was nice to see kind of just not quite a powerless Superman, but just more or less a subdued Superman, but still handling things the way he has to handle them. It was a really cool issue. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm really looking forward to finding out what the hell happened, how this all came about with issue 11, which I should have in my hands soon. But this is pretty neat. So yeah, it's Superman number 11 from DC and Josh and Joshua and Bruno.
Vince, we should all be so lucky as to have someone love us as much as David loves Superman.
It's a consummate love. It really is.
It is a deep, passionate love that would make Renee jealous if she listened to our podcast.
Speaking of love, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read Weapon X-Men number 1?
Not yet.
Oh, my God. No. Come on.
Dude, you act like we don't put a list of what we've read on.
Oh, this, yeah, yeah, we do put a list of what we read, but not until the day of recording. That's what, not me, but you two. Day of.
Well, you like, still had hours to look and see if I read it.
Yes, I must monitor Jason's reading habits. Oh, God, it's so good. Like, stop.
Oh, no, is it?
It is. It is so good. I didn't want to get into
it.
Okay.
No, please get into it.
No. I'll just tell you the team. Age of Apocalypse Wolverine.
Right, I knew that.
Marvel Zombies Wolverine.
Yeah, that's problem number one. Go ahead.
It's okay. Earth X Wolverine.
Earth X.
Old Man Logan. Yeah, the fat balding.
Oh, the old elk. Oh, yeah. The giant hair. Yeah. Okay.
Big, mm-hmm. big beer belly.
Yep.
Old Man Logan.
Respect. Love Old Man Logan.
And Jane Howlett.
Okay.
From Earth 1281.
Yeah, throwback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. No, I'm with that. That sounds all right. Do they get recruited? Is it a getting the gang together issue, or? Are they already?
See, I don't want to spoil any of it for you, but the Avengers make an appearance, sort of.
Okay.
The big bad is someone who a villain that I love. It's they recreate.
Just say who the villain is, dude. I don't care. Like
Onslaught.
Okay. All right. Cool.
What and do I need to read before this?
Nothing.
No, nothing. Okay. It's
and they recreate, albeit from a different angle, the Captain America annual cover. What is it? Number 8. You know the
Wolverine.
I think it's Garney and was it Garney? No, it's Zek who did that cover.
No, that was Zek in that cover.
Yeah, Mike Zek. Well, it's not Wolverine that's doing the clawing. It's Old Man Logan. And it's this version of Captain America. Yeah. I thought it was a lot of fun. Like, super fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's old school. There's a lot of panels. There's a lot of exposition. It pretty much spans the gamut. Like, Cable's in it, and Colossus, and Ms. Marvel and Magneto and Jean Grey, and I mean, there's a lot.
Sounds busy.
It's very busy. There's a lot of characters. It's like a really, really well done what if, like stupid well done. I thought it was. I was hoping that you read it. It's Christos Gage wrote it. And
wow. Okay.
Yeah, Ildre Cynar was the artist.
Okay. Nice. Right.
Yep.
So it looks like absolutely astounding. It's really, really well done. It opens up with Wolverine, AOA Wolverine on a pile of dead bodies.
Okay.
I'm sold. What? And there's a kiss between Wolverine and Jean, as there should be in every comic featuring Wolverine and Jean. I just thought it was great.
All right.
I'm not saying you need to read it, but if you're looking for a good time,
mm-hmm.
I think this will give you at least 30 to 40 minutes of wonderful, fun times.
There is no planet, there's no reality where reading a single issue of a Marvel comic takes 40 minutes.
I don't know, there's a lot of dialogue in this.
We're talking 5 minutes tops.
Well, maybe some of us don't just like glance over things. We like
maybe if it's as good as you're making it out to be, maybe it'll hold my attention. We'll see.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I would like a whole reality built on this. And Onslaught pretty much overtakes an entire planet, which means everyone we and these characters love are now under the sway of Onslaught.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I saw the Marvel PR for the new villains of the Blood Rain event that's coming out.
Marking out.
You give me new superpowered vampires. Oh my god, I'm fired up.
I hope they match the threat to the forces of good. Like I said, what does Iron Man care about vampires? Whatever.
Well, he's a hero.
He is a hero, but he's also pretty much impenetrable. What vampire is ever going to pierce the armor?
Well, these are superpowered ones, so if it's strong enough to rip up his vampire.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I hope they amp up the whatever to let the antagonist fit the scene. Like, nothing. Sorry.
Talk about the symbiotes every week for a while there. Gonna be me with these vampires, motherfucker.
Every week.
So it's gonna be me with the vampires.
You're out of your damn mind. Out of your damn mind. It was not every week.
It is. I'm amused. It's cute how, and I'm not, I can't deny it. You guys are gonna get on me about my Superman love, and we got symbiote Wolverine guy over here.
I do love Wolverine. It's really strange how much I've grown to love Wolverine. It's so stupid.
No, it's true. Dude.
So dumb.
It's all about this Wolverine. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't.
To be fair, Depp, every time we talk about the Wolverine, the next stuff is because Vince asks me what I think of it. Like, I never bring it up directly.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. Yeah,
Is that a badge of honor? What is that? It shouldn't be.
Like, no, he's trying to say that we're throwing shit on him for talking about Superman every week, and he's trying to say like,
"Oh, I get it." Like, yeah,
right. Yeah, that's
no, I totally get it. Yeah. But okay, while we're at it, I will praise an X book, and I will not praise an X book. I thought Ultimate X-Men 1 was trash.
Oh, no, that's harsh.
Oh, I didn't read it yet.
Yeah,
I thought it was harsh. Like, I thought trash. I
mean, it's not an X book. It's not.
I agree with you there.
It's one person's version of one character.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. It felt like it should have been in one of those anthologies where, like,
right.
Someone's, where Peach is like, oh, I have
speak on it, though. You wrote it, so talk about it.
Who wrote what? What did you say?
Read it, so talk about it. Did I say wrote? You read it, so talk about it if you want.
No, I don't really particularly want to. I mean, it's like you said, I think I wouldn't call it trash because I think the quality of the art is.
No, of course it's not. Well, yeah. I'm a little bit super saturated with Peach Momoko, too.
Okay. Well, I would say, Momoko's interiors are, to me, very reminiscent of Dust in the Wind. I think it's she's got very, you know, a little more classic manga style, but I don't have much to say about it because it's not for me either. I mean, it's a story of Armor as a young girl manifesting her powers in Japan. And, it presumably is going to lead to, you know, the formation of the team over the first arc. But, this was a little standalone slice of life look into Armor's world for 22 pages. And my head, if I cared enough, my head would explode that's how they choose to lead off a brand new Ultimate X-Men universe. Right. But I don't care enough. So it's like, it is what it is. I hope someone else really loves it. Anyway.
Right. I mean, I don't want to disparage it. It is of a certain quality. And Momoko is a reasonably talented illustrator. It's just that her stuff, to me, to my eyes, has the sameness to it.
Mm.
That... Mm-hmm. And then that so does John Byrne stuff. I get it.
Right.
But I mean, she has a very distinct, very identifiable style that I think it worked well on Demon Days. I don't think it works at all well with this Armor series or whatever it's going to morph into. But whenever Armor was paired with Wolverine, whether it was in, I don't know, Ultimate X-Men or Astonishing X-Men, whatever, I zone out. Like, Armor's... I don't see the allure of the character. I really don't. She's a kid with an exoskeleton. I'm like, okay. What else you got? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority, but it's not... She's not a character. Even in, what was the Jason Aaron thing? Like, Wolverine and the X-Men. She appeared in there.
Yeah.
Right, and it's just like I don't know. I just like tune out when certain characters appear. She's one of
them. That is true. You do that.
I do. So I'm the bad guy. Whatever.
Well, one would argue that you like. What, I guess one might ask, why did you bother reading this? Because did you not know it was a
No, I wanted to see if it was on a level with the other Ultimate titles that have been released. And for my money, Black Panther is the only one worth reading.
I mean, I haven't read Ultimate X-Men yet. I don't know when I'm going to. But yes, I mean, after the two issues of Spider-Man, I only one of Black Panther, I'm
Yeah, Black Panther was really...
I think I'm out on the whole thing. None of it's... Right. Yeah, I'm good.
I don't understand... Like you said, I'm at a loss to determine who exactly is the target audience for this. Where if you're going to do... if you're going to relive the glory... Or try to relive the glory days of the Ultimate line, and yet they're so transformed and so different that they bear no resemblance to the Ultimate line. Like, what are you doing? I don't get it.
Well, I don't mind trying a different direction, but I'm certainly not a comics marketing executive, but just for me, because I think I would imagine the allure of this was that Peach was drawing the book, but she's been, to your point, she's been drawing X-Men books for what, 3 years now? 4 years? So it did seem weird, Yeah, it I almost feel like it probably would sell better if they just pitched this Peach Momoko doing like a manga verse of her, like just continuing at that. But whatever. Yeah, like I said, I think there was already a thread in our Slack channel today I think Raj started it about how much he adored it. It was the best thing he's read in a while. So, like, you know, so there definitely is an audience for it. I just think, you know, it's just maybe not for us.
Just reading Dap's comments on the Slack. He's so cute.
Yeah, I'm
you're so. Why do you even care? Don't even care. Do what you got
to
do.
Listen, I'm trying to abide by the rules, but I thought
I guess there are somewhat rules, but
so if I flubbed, I flubbed. It's fine.
You didn't flub. Shut up.
No, you didn't flub. You just have a cheat code because there's roles.
Yes, there are multiple. Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, in all honesty, I checked while you were talking. Since you've talked Superman, which World Finest doesn't really count because it's a team book,
right?
It's been a good 6 episodes since you've talked Superman.
Okay.
Probably more. So
you mean the Superman proper comic, because he talked about action like 2 weeks ago.
Right, yeah. Action. Well, you checked too?
Yes.
Did I talk about what the hell was action?
Yeah, you did. You talked about action, but I don't count that either.
I'm trying to stick to the characters though. So the title's one thing, but I forgot about action.
It's rough though, because I mean now the tentpole characters all have multiple books. So if you like Superman, it's really hard not to talk about him when you got Action, World Finest, you got Superman proper, you got one shots and manga. Like there's so much out there, and it's even worse with Batman. Thankfully, none of us.
It's exponential.
Oh yeah, none of us are Batman marks. So thank goodness.
Spider-Man and Batman, the number of books that come out for each of them is, and I guess I count like the symbiotes of Spider-Man.
But that's you're wrong because
maybe I was gonna say maybe that shouldn't, but. Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Woo. Thank you for being here with us one more time. Remember, if you want to get collected editions of any stripe, OGNs, trade paperbacks, omnibus editions, manga, anything with a nice thick spine, or not, or little spine, but it has a spine, you're going to get it at cheapgraphicnovels.com for less than you're going to pay elsewhere. Take my word for it, but just don't take my word for it. Go there. Look at what they have. Price a book, go on Amazon and price the same book, and you're going to see. You're going to pay less at cheapgraphicnovels.com. And if you're super smart, you're not going to pay shipping on your second order. Well, how do you do that, you're asking? Well, you're going to order something, anything, something small, and you're going to get an email confirmation. You're going to reply to the email confirmation saying, my buddies at 11 o'clock comics sent me, Sir Max, what do you got? What can you do for me? And Max is going to say, well, you're in the group now. You're going to get free shipping on your next order. Where else are you going to get that?
Mm-hmm.
I'll wait. Go look. Nowhere. You're not going to get it anywhere. CheapGraphicNovels.com. And, buddies, in your travels, please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics, where we have 2 tiers for your indulgence. There's a tip tier, which you can use to your heart's content. We would love it. But there's a $5 tier that gets you a special episode that nobody else gets to hear. It's not on the feed. It's not on the internet. You just get it because you're a patron.
Super secret. Yeah.
And it is the Book of the Month episode, which we will be recording in a couple days. And it's a big one. So if you want to hear that, and you want to be in the exclusive super secret club that only hears that, that's the $5 tier. The $10 tier gets you the special episode and access to the Slack. So you're going to get original fanzine downloads. You're going to get page a day, which is an example of a complete sequential page every single day. You're going to get cover a day. For right now, it is the Titanic team-ups, but as far as the Slaggers go, they do their own thing where they post their own covers. Then you're going to get We Love Ellipsis, an established artist of merit. This month, it's Michael Golden. We love Michael Golden. So every day you get a cover that, or an interior page, not spill the beans, that Michael Golden has worked on. There's a ton of stuff that you're going to get when you're a Slacker, not the least of which, in fact, it's the best of which, is the camaraderie that you're going to receive, because this is the hill I will die on. They are slackers. Always welcome new people with open arms. You're one of the family. And then that just opens the door to discussion on all matters, not only comics. So if you want to, you know, see what that's all about, go to 11o'clockcomics.com/. Don't go there because that's the wrong URL. It's patreon.com/11o'clockcomics. In your travels, if you were paying attention last episode, Dap hinted at this, but I'm going to make good on it now. It's no secret that I am a lapsed Walking Dead viewer. I checked out once all of the faces weren't so familiar in the group. I checked out, and it was maybe a year or so before Rick left. So I haven't been watching the show. Don't know the lore or the legacy or anything about what happened after a certain point. But I saw, when we were at New York Comic Con, we saw the big banners for The Ones Who Live, right?
Yes.
And we saw Dead City. And I was like, So I checked them out. And I watched one episode of Dead City, which led to me watching all six episodes of Dead City. And I watched the first episode of The Ones Who Live, which led to me watching all of the episodes of The Ones Who Live to date. And the point of what I'm trying to say here is the spinoffs are, in aggregate, better than Walking Dead at the point from which I jumped. I mean, that may not be high praise, but Walking Dead is infamous for having really good seasons and really bad seasons. But I will say this with confidence. Dead City is an amazing show. I think the pairing of Maggie and Negan is a little bit sadistic, but that's by design, right? Do you know what's going on in Dead City?
No, I don't know the premise of either show.
Okay, well, in Dead City, there's this character called the Croat, who once worked with Negan. Negan took him in after his family was turned into a zombie buffet, and he was out of his mind. And Negan took him in and kind of raised him as a surrogate, I don't want to say son because the ages are similar, but it's not unlike a child where he was totally out of it. Negan raised him, brought him into the group, and you know, the Croat did his thing, which was interrogation. And he's incredibly barbaric and brutal and will kill children to get information. So not a nice person. But in this storyline, the Croat takes Herschel, Maggie's son. And he makes up this premise that, yeah, you'll get your son back when you give me all your grain, which is complete bullshit because he knows of Maggie's association with Negan. Negan, at one point got fed up with the Croat and wanted to take him out, but he fucked up the shot and ended up blowing off his ear and didn't kill him. So Negan thinks there's incredibly bad blood between him and the Croat. And needless to say, there's incredibly bad blood between Maggie and Negan. But the Croat takes Herschel. And the Croat's base is in New York City. One of the most dangerous places on the planet. The army blew up the bridges out of the city. So New York City is nothing but zombies. Like, it is teeming with zombies. And Maggie's got to get in to get her son. And who does she enlist to help but Negan? Because she knows of his history with the Croat. And it is ridiculous. They get into the city and you start hearing these things smacking the ground. And there's zombies falling out of high-rise windows.
Nice.
That's insane. Like, they're little zombie bombs, right? Because zombies don't. Like, they're just going to keep walking. And they just walk through open windows and they you know, plummet to the ground. But the reason why the Croat took Herschel was not to do anything against Maggie or get grain. It's that he knew that she would eventually exploit the history that he and Negan have and bring Negan into the picture. He wants Negan. But the reality of the situation is he doesn't want to kill Negan. What does he want him for? I won't say anything else because this is an ongoing series. I thought it was maybe a 6-issue miniseries, but it's not. There's going to be another season. It keeps going. Yeah, it just opens up. Because I'm watching it. I'm on episode 4, and they're introducing a new character. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then episode 5, they introduce another new character. I'm like, wait a minute, this can't end. And it didn't end. There's a complication in the fact that Negan has a surrogate daughter. She's almost like a trophy of a sense, because 5 men raped and brutalized Negan's wife. And he hunted all 5 men down and killed them. And this little girl, she's a tween, maybe, I don't know how old she is, maybe 13. Her father was one of the men that transgressed against Negan's wife. So Negan killed him. So I guess he feels like an obligation to take the girl in. Her name's Ginny. And she's just complicating everything. And there's even more complications. Because Negan killed those 5 men, he's wanted. There's a new Babylon marshal named Armstrong on his trail. It's a really good series. It's all about parents and children, or I shouldn't say children, offspring, or individuals that they have nurtured. Because I considered the Croat a child of Negan. And then you have Ginny, who's a weird child of Negan. And then Herschel's been kidnapped by the Croat, and Herschel's Maggie's son. Like, it's this whole thing about parentage and children. It's really, really good. I won't say much about The Ones Who Live other than it's phenomenal. It's like you take the bleakness of Walking Dead and turn it up Spinal Tap level to 11. Like, let's state the obvious. The show exists because it's a reunion of Rick and Michonne, right? But that's where it ends. Like, that's the only joy that Rick and Michonne are together. Everything else is complete and utter shit. Rick is in a situation that is incredibly difficult to get out of, and then Michonne is pulled into that situation, and it's just like, Terry O'Quinn's in it. I love Terry O'Quinn.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
You're on lock, baby.
Yeah. No, it's Ones Who Live and Dead City are absolutely astounding shows. And I'm like, wow, if they only continued to do this back then, I would have kept watching. But, and I saw the first episode of Daryl Dixon and I liked it, but I don't think it's on a level with these two shows yet. So I'm watching.
I don't know how he got to Europe. How do you get to Europe? How does that happen?
On a boat. He got
his motorcycle.
Well, no, the motorcycle isn't in it. He doesn't have the crossbow either.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Oh,
no, crossbow's
left
gone.
Left behind. Left yeah. Carol in the
really
crossbow.
Stretching himself.
Yeah, well, he was in a situation where he was cast adrift and out of it, completely out of it, and he ends up in Europe. Okay. All right. Well, you know, suspension of disbelief, I guess. But the point, Ones Who Live, Dead City, if you're a lapsed Walking Dead viewer like myself, check these out, because I bet this is going to rekindle some of that old Walking Dead magic. They're really, really well done.
The first, so when you mentioned The Ones Who Live, and I didn't realize it had started this past Sunday, the third last week. So I forgot to set the DVR. But I was watching parts of the media scrum after the pay-per-view Sunday night, and as I'm scrolling through YouTube, I noticed the first full episode of The Ones Who Live. So I watched it and stayed up later than I wanted to, and I had planned to, but it was worth it. And it is such a heavy and bleak fucking episode. It's insane. And now we can finally say, you know, Rick Grimes is more like the comic book version, but you have, yeah. I watched that. I told my neighbors, because they were asking if I knew when it was going to start. Like, early last year, because they, I mean, we all knew the show was coming, so they, I guess they've still been watching The Walking Dead, and I haven't, so we haven't been able to talk about that. So I told them I watched the first episode, and that it's, I guess it's two episodes every Sunday for 3 weeks or whatever, but I haven't seen the second episode yet. I got to see if the DVR caught it. If not, I'll on-demand it, but I'll also on-demand Dead City and maybe Daryl Dixon, but
I think you'll like Dead City. I'll tell you, Lauren Cohen could stand in a corner for 45
Lauren
to 50
Cohen in New York City.
Yeah. I'm there. I mean, I'd watch her just standing still, but, yes. Negan, Jeffrey Morgan. Yeah. He is just so goddamn good. Like, I think Negan was like, everybody has a role. That they were born to play.
Oh, yeah, he's,
I think, like, and he does something in like the quips are fast. He's an asshole.
Yes.
And
he's perfect for it.
And is brutal when he has to be, but he also feels, in the presence of Maggie, like he's just affirming her view that he's a fucking inhuman monster. Mm-hmm. But he's, I don't think he really is. It opens up a little bit of the there's a callback to the Glenn, many callbacks to the Glenn incident, and it frames it in a way where it doesn't lessen what he did, but you get a bit more insight into why he did it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll see. Yeah. I'll
it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. Tonight.
After I finish Dynamite, I'll check the on-demand listing.
I subscribe to AMC Plus just because of it.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
There you go.
Okay. So this was an absolute gamble. I don't know what I do know what possessed me to give it a try, and I am I'm quite surprised at it's. For any of your travels, it's not necessarily something I'm going to like say. It's obviously not the greatest thing I've read, but the idea of it, I love What If, and I really really like James Cameron's Aliens, and I had no idea this was happening, but yes, I think it's a mini series, but there's a limited series What If Aliens, published by Marvel. Actually co-written by Paul Reiser, who of course played Burke, Carter Burke in Aliens. Paul and Leon Reiser are credited as the concept creators, along with Adam F. Goldberg and Hans Rodionoff and Brian Volk-Weiss. So way too many cooks, but, art, in this issue is GUIU, so it's Guy Villanova, colors by Yen Nitro, colors by Clayton Kyles, and as a typical What If, it starts off with what actually happened, and we're in the thick of it with Ripley and Hicks and Gorman and Hudson and Vasquez basically getting on Burke's ass because he's the reason why shit's going crazy over here on LV-426. So we get up to the part where in the movie, those of us who've seen Aliens, when Burke runs away after the aliens are above them, where in the area they're located in, and aliens are, the xenomorphs are closing in on them, and everybody's freaking out because it seems like they're in the room, but they're not, but actually because they're in the vents above them. So everybody's blowing away the aliens while Burke runs away, gets away from Ripley, and basically walks right into a xenomorph. So we know what happens to him in the movie. However, in this series, he's basically just kind of paralyzed and just basically like webbed up, and they're just he's stuck in an area surrounded, not surrounded, but there are eggs in the area. And the rest of the events go off the way they kind of gone off with the Marines expiring the way they did. While Ripley is attacking or battling the one xenomorph, where she's in the whole constructed bot outfit, Burke is still trying to get away, because when she was fighting the alien, he was freed from his cocoon. So he's able to get away. He is he's on a call with Yutani, with Mr. Yutani, and asking for assistance to get back home. They strike a deal, and we cut to basically 35 years later, and Burke is living a miserable life. All he wanted to do was get home to his daughter. He had asked for a lifetime contract with the company, a retirement benefit package, plus dental, because his little girl's going to need braces one day. So he gets all that, but not really the way he expects. He has to fucking, his little rinky-dink bicycle he takes to work every day. He's the mining operations and assets manager. Just kind of going through the motions. It's a crap job, still with the company, obviously. And he seems to be estranged from his daughter after everything he did. And he's just kind of sitting in the park on a bench feeding birds, and but the holodome is glitching. So he calls basically like tech support to let them know things aren't really running all that smooth over here on D350L8, which apparently is a dead asteroid located in the ass end of the universe, which is where the company put him. And once he says who he is, once he tells the operator that he's Carter Burke, he's like, wait, the Carter Burke? He says, my father says you're humankind's most rivaled Judas next to Judas. And you tried smuggling a xenomorph egg back to Earth that could have wiped out the entire planet. And you thought, like, you know, you would have ended up Earth would have ended up just like Hadley's Hope. And you thought, like, everybody would have been fine with it. Like, you wouldn't have ended up right where you are. But obviously it's everybody else's fault. He's just claiming he's the scapegoat and he did everything that he was supposed to do because he's a company man, this, that, and the other. Conversation really doesn't go the way he wants, but this android, big black dude, actually looks just like dude from Cowboy Bebop, but he comes out of this ship. And his name is Cygnus, and he's here to deliver something to Burke, and they get to a hidden away place, opens up this little chamber, and it's a fucking egg, and the last page is basically you sitting there. Burke is standing there all proud, just like Carter Burke is back in business. And the art, great job on the art, because the Marines, very reminiscent to the actors that played them in the movie. Paul Reiser is absolutely here in full effect in this book. But yeah, I got to the end, saw that it, you know, to be continued, so I didn't know it was going to be an actual series. I thought it was going to be a one-off. It's fine, whatever. But yeah, I was really surprised by I didn't know about it, but yeah, in your travels, if you're interested in what ifs, if you're interested if Marvel's going to do this with other licensed properties, I'm curious to know what they do maybe with some of the Star Wars stuff, if they want to go that route, but that'd be neat. But I figured, you know, as an idea, I gave it a shot. I dug it. In your travels, what if aliens from Marvel.
Nice. I read it.
What'd you think?
You don't need to know my thoughts.
Word up. Okay, well, I was Helen of Windhorn when we started this episode for a reason, because our buddy Tom King is, I believe this is his first Dark Horse book, right? I don't
know. I think you're right.
Yeah. So he's making his Dark Horse debut, reteaming with one of his best collaborators, I think, ever, Miss Bilquis Evely, who was, of course, the artist in Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. They get back together here for this Dark Horse creator-owned book called Helen of Windhorn. I won't get much into the plot here because, A, it's in your travels, and B, as Dap alluded at the intro, it actually comes out next week. We got review comps, as we often do, and had a chance to read it. And so if you have, if you listen to this before you head to the shop on Wednesday, then hopefully this will tip you over to considering buying it if you didn't pre-order it. But really, really interesting. The elevator pitch, which I always side-eye when they do these kinds of things, is a gothic sword and sorcery epic that's Conan the Barbarian meets Wizard of Oz. We'll see on that. Again, that's a strange, it's a kind of an odd elevator pitch, but I'm sure someone at Dark Horse the PR wrote that. But basically, it is a story of a young woman who's a bit of a rebel, and she gets basically pulled back into her life of opulent wealth when her father dies, because her grandfather is, you know, got this massive manor, and there's a bit of an upstairs downstairs vibe. And then we get a twist toward the end of the issue, which I think sets the tone for what the rest of the series is going to be. It's a 6-issue limited series. So Tom is breaking form, not only going to Dark Horse, but doing a 6-issue miniseries instead. But no, it was awesome. And Bilquis's art is incomparable. She is so fucking good. And she because I think of how detailed she is, she only does maybe 6 issues a year, but everyone is just jaw dropper. And this is no exception. So, yeah, Helen of Windhorn. Check it out next week, y'all.
I really, really hope Clayton Cowles got paid a shit ton of money.
A lot of work.
A ton of blue balloons and text boxes in
there. That is true.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How are you going to cover up Bilquis's art like this? But no, Tom, I mean, it's a great team, and it's a pretty fun first issue.
For sure.
Nice. All right, everyone. Hey, thank you for listening to this. Once again, please go to our sponsor, cheapgraphicnovels.com. Remember the patron, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. Buy some comics, read them, love them, talk about them online, maybe in our areas of the internets, and do your due diligence and say good night. Shit, there's an intro. This
you
is
man,
fuck,
bro.
This is fucked up. There's not supposed to be an intro on this song.
That's hilarious.
What the fuck is this?
The wrong thing, my friend.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. It's going to be anticlimactic.
Going to be.
Who did this? Fucking people. Shit. Jason, you like the Blazer Cult? Top 10, right?
Totally, dude. Oh, it's my good.
Fucking right.
What's not the love?
Yeah. David.
This is what I picture the Welcome Back Carter kids listen to, like, in their lunch break.
Good night.
Seriously, no love.
We're gonna have a long ass conversation.
Now. No love for Blue Oyster Cult.
Not particularly. I don't dislike them. It's not like I'm like casting shade at them.
Okay, fair enough. Godzilla. David. I said it before, I'm just saying it again.
Uh-huh.
Repeat.
Hey.
Shit, was it that long?
Yes.
Yeah, that intro was fucked up. It doesn't say, like, please be aware that this video has flashing images. That drives me crazy.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
That
was good. All right. Do your thing and tell them without reservations, that you love them.
Oh my God, so much.
Wow, you're the first one to chime in. That's rare.
Yep.
Tony thinks you hate everyone.
He's not wrong.
You know, yeah. He said to him, why does Jason hate everyone? I'm like, I don't know. He thinks he's better than everybody, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Peace out.
Oh, lady, y'all.
Yay.
X's and O's.
Stayed awake.
Yeah. He's a big boy now.
I'm all big and stiff.
That's it for that one.